court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
How you doing today, Tommy?
Struggling, dude, struggling.
Why are you struggling?
Work situation.
I've been working my tail off, too.
Well, yours is actual work. Mine's just worry. Work and worry.
I got some worry going on, too. I've had some waking up in the middle of the night thinking, oh, geez. Thinking about cases that I've got going on, so I'll be glad for a little bit of a holiday break coming up here.
Well, now, I don't wake up in the middle of the night. When I go to sleep, I'm asleep. One good thing. I may worry when I'm awake, but when I'm asleep, I'm asleep.
You got your CPAP machine strapped onto your face.
That's right. That's right. I think it has sleeping gas in it because, man, when I put it on, within 5 minutes, I'm done.
Well, it could be like a habit or like a ritual type thing that, you know, kind of does that.
It could be. I don't know.
I do snore, so maybe I have some sleep apnea, too.
You better get checked. I'm just telling you, it saved my life.
I just don't want to wear a mask.
Well, you look like a fighter pilot. Hey, Goose!
It's true. Goose died, though.
Oh, well, don't be Goose.
No, don't be Goose.
That's a little word of warning to everybody. Don't be Goose. Goose is dead.
I keep watching Top Gun every time I watch it. It's like, well, maybe he won't die this time, but...
Always happens.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Poor Goose. His goose is cooked.
So, this episode is kind of different than ones we've done before in that...
Yeah. Well, you told me what the topic was. I said, what?
Well, and the reason I chose this topic or ran it past you was because... I actually kind of had to research this for work.
Hey, look, I'm not here to help you with your work. I got my work to worry about. This is supposed to be fun.
And I thought this would be kind of like interesting to kill two birds with one stone. But the more I got into it, I'm like, this is pretty droll.
Oh, well, now at least you've built up the excitement for our audience.
Well, but here's the thing is that it could actually really benefit you, though. So, you know.
Oh, well. All right. Well, I didn't know that we were here to benefit anybody.
Well, bar trivia and... the occasional tidbit of legal knowledge.
Okay, well, I'm going to see if this topic ever comes up on bar trivia. I'm going to wonder what kind of bar you're in. A mechanics bar.
The topic is mechanics liens.
Yeah, you take this to Napa and do a trivia show.
Well, Tommy, you did a little bit of research on this, right?
Yes, I did.
What did you?
I had to, so I'd know what the hell we were talking
about.
What
did you think a mechanics lien was when I first told you that?
Well, I figure that's... like when you've got three of them that you're paying to look at your car and they're just standing there leaning up against it and eating a sandwich or something, telling big stories. It's like state road workers. You got one during the work and five leaning on shovels over there while they watch.
It's funny. Like I took my car in to get work done. Actually, new tires. And they called me and they gave me, well, we got under there and we saw that it needed this and needed that. And I was like, oh, geez, here we go. So I asked them a few questions about it, and their answers were sufficient to make me think that they actually probably did need to do that kind of work. And I said, okay, well, you know, when's it going to be ready? Like, well, I don't know. Probably around five or so. I was like, okay, well, I'll give you a call or come by. And so I went by, like, right after work. I get over there, and I was like, okay, I'm here. Is the car done? Well, no, we're still working on it. It's a little bit more tricky than we thought. And I'm like, okay, is this going to cost me more money? That was my first word. They're like, no. It's just, you know, a bit more problem. I look in the bay, and I actually do see a mechanic standing there eating a sandwich.
Well, there you go. He was in his mechanic's lean.
He was.
He was leaning up against the car and eating.
He wasn't leaning on the car. He was leaning on a shelf. It looked like he was eating the sandwich kind of hurriedly, though. So I think he was under a time crunch.
Were his hands all greasy?
I don't know.
That used to get me on the railroad when I used to work track work.
Mm-hmm.
there was guys and they just, it was lunchtime and man, they just reach in that lunch bag and pull that sandwich out and their fingers were black. Cause I mean, we were working on a track. So you got dirt and mud and creosote and everything else there. You just grab that sandwich and start eating. Hey, you want a bite? No, thank you. There's black fingerprints on it.
Creosote. That's a good additive, right? That's good for you.
Good additive. I think it's a carcinogen.
I'm sure it is. That's the stuff they soak the
ties in. Cross ties get soaked in it.
Not much like that smells like that.
No, there was a big legal case here recently concerning that.
Oh, really?
I think it was with the Norfolk Southern that they had a bunch of faulty cross ties that the company that produced their cross ties couldn't keep up with it, so they were sending them out uncreosoted.
Uncreosoted, you say?
Yeah, and that means that they are not as heavy and they deteriorate like 10 times. That's what the creosote keeps them from deteriorating, keeps bugs out and all that other kind of stuff. Makes them much heavier, and they were uncreosoted, and they were all falling apart way ahead of when they were supposed to.
What's the lifespan on a railroad tie?
I think a normal railroad tie will last about 5 years, maybe 10.
That's it?
Yeah.
They're replacing that frequently?
Oh, yeah. They're just wood. What do you think? And they're carrying hundreds of tons.
I mean, there's just so many of them, though. How do they keep up
You're constantly maintaining the track. They go out and check the track like once a week for the most part. They have to do inspections on it and then you start prioritizing depending on the traffic loads and the density of it is where you need to start replacing ties. Now they also have concrete ties in some areas and those last longer.
Really?
Yeah, and you can tell the difference if you're on concrete ties or wood ties when you're riding over them in a train.
What is the
completely different feel.
The wooden feel is a bit more forgiving. The concrete's more jarring?
Yeah. Well, the concrete's smoother.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's even a different sound.
Is it just more expensive to produce that?
Yeah. Yeah, the concrete ties are more expensive. They require special handler and everything else. So.
What is the cost-benefit ratio to a concrete tie versus a creosote tie? Is it, like, way more expensive?
Yeah, you want to use the concrete ties in really high production lanes where you can't afford to shut it down to constantly be changing them out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the wooden ties will serve the purpose in most of your other branches where it's not as high a density.
I just can't believe that they're replacing that frequently. I mean, there are so many of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's just part of the cost of doing business. Now, they may go through and they go through and mark which ones need changing out. It's not like every one of them has to change out because they deteriorate at different rates depending on how well they're treated and stuff. And what kind of terrain. Some are sitting more in a boggy area, and some are sitting up nice and high with the ballast around them.
Well, I did always wonder where all these different landscaping places get all the railroad ties from.
They steal them from the railroad.
Well, they don't steal them. They probably sell them after they're done with them, right?
I don't think so. I think they go up and get recycled. What happens is they usually pull them all out and stack them up by the railroad to leave them to come along and get later. And I think some of these people come along and grab them and help themselves to a five-finger discount.
There's big business in railroad ties.
Well, do you want to change the topic to railroad ties? Because we have really gotten sidetracked, not to be a pun.
No, I was kind of fascinated by it. I mean, I'm assuming maybe our listeners were too. I didn't really realize that railroad ties were replaced so frequently.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the game.
So, mechanics liens is...
where were we?
It often doesn't have anything to do with actually a car mechanic, as you might think. Mechanics lien actually has kind of a long history in America, and it has to do a lot more really with like personal or the real property.
You are correct.
And you did a little bit of historical research on it, didn't you?
I did, because I like that kind of stuff.
What did you find with the historical research?
Well, first of all, the term lien, it comes from the French root with a meaning similar to link.
The French root?
The French root.
Like ginger?
Well, there's just the French root. Socle bleu! It is related to the word liaison.
Oh.
So mechanics liens on properties in the United States date from the 18th century. In the modern form, it was actually first conceived by Thomas Jefferson.
How about that?
Yeah, and he did it to encourage construction in the new capital city of Washington. It was established by the Maryland General Assembly because they were... At the time, D.C. was part of Maryland.
Well, it makes sense that if it is a French kind of theory because Jefferson spent so much time in France.
That's right.
I was actually just listening to the Hamilton soundtrack today, and I was talking the track about Jefferson coming back from France.
That's right. And now Jefferson didn't really dream this up. I mean, this was already kind of in common law practice in England and in France, mm-hmm. and it was being employed in areas like in Louisiana, which had a strong French influence down there.
Right.
So they had the lien was you know, not, he didn't really invent it, but that's, he's the one that injured it into actual law.
Right.
So it seems that the United States version was original as it gave builders a more robust right into the land itself versus just the improvements value.
Mm-hmm.
So it was talking about, you know, in construction
right.
is what it was on, as opposed to personal property like an automobile or something like
exactly.
that. Exactly. So it gave it protected use. If you went and did a bunch of work and didn't get paid, it gave you a way to recover what you lost.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, that's kind of an inducement for somebody to want to be able to build something to know that they're going to get paid for it.
Exactly.
So I think it's a good thing. And it started in D.C., I guess, to try to build up the capital, is what you said too, right?
And that was to encourage people to come in and do the work that they were protected, because maybe this was a common thing, people not getting paid or people being taken advantage of or something like that.
Yeah.
So this was a way to encourage them to come work and build our nation's capital.
Hey, thanks for building that deck behind my house. Oh, how much? No, no, I'm not going to pay you for that.
Well, then I'll take your whole house.
Yeah. That's what it boils down to. Now, this is, I have a lot of familiarity with mechanics liens in Florida in particular, because that's where I practiced the majority of my storied legal career. And it's not really storied, but...
But you tell stories about it.
I do tell stories.
That makes it story.
There you go. But in Florida statute 713.06, and that last, well, not exactly that 0.06, but that whole chapter 713, what it does is it lays out the how you technically go about perfecting a mechanics lien in Florida. And whenever you're dealing with these kinds of statutory creations like mechanics liens and things like that, it's very important that you actually follow the steps that are prescribed in the statute, because if you don't do that, that can be a fatal flaw to it. So if it says, for example, that you need to do A, B, D, and then C, you better make sure that's the order you follow, because otherwise, if you don't, your case will be thrown out.
And these rules are different from state to state.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
there's not, it's not a federal law.
No, I mean, these are vastly different. I mean, this Florida one, from the research I've done, is actually, I mean, I don't think there's any other state that has one just like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of went through doing a little bit of research to see what all the different states were. And there was a chart I found that had 50 state guide to mechanics liens in the United States. I think every single one of them, as I scrolled through it, was different. I mean, it's extremely statute or code driven by your state.
Now, there's only one where it's a part of the state constitution.
Oh, really?
California.
I did not know that.
It's a mechanics lien is part of the state constitution. Texas, kind of, but it comes under the Texas state property codes. So
that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, I practice in Florida the most, so I'm going to kind of go through that. And now, each state, the law is different and the rights are different, but in theory, they're all kind of the same. They're kind of that same theory you just talked about with regards to Thomas Jefferson and inducement and the fact that you want to make sure the builder has the ability to be paid for what they did and give them an interest in the property. So in Florida, it starts off by filing what's called a notice to owner. And this is something that is sent to the owner of the real property, basically to let them know that they are doing an improvement to their land. Now, here's the interesting thing. A lot of time, there is no contract between the subcontractors and the owner of the property.
Right. They got a contractor, and then that contractor gets a subcontractor.
Exactly. So there's privity of contract between the contractor and the owner. So that's pretty clear cut, and that's defined by the contract. And there's protections there. But you have these other subcontractors that come on, and they basically provide services. So a notice to owner is what is sent out, and it basically puts the owner on notice that, hey, I am Joe the plumber, and I just plumbed your house. And here's what it cost, and I need to be paid before you finish paying your contractor. Because a lot of times when you're paying a contractor, it's in installments.
Right.
And what a contractor should do is take that money and then distribute it to the subcontractors as they go along and pay them off. But a lot of times what happens is the contractor will take that money up front, and pay other things and then wait till the very end to pay some of the subcontractors. And then hopefully there's enough money left over to avoid any kind of issues.
Yeah, especially if they're taking the money, like you say, in payments or on a draw.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that they're paid.
Yeah.
Before they worry about some other people getting paid.
And yeah.
So you want to, I learned this lesson from building a house.
Yeah.
You really want to stay on top of them and budget-wise make them report to you where everything stands on a regular basis.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're going to be stuck with a bunch more that you owe at the end and an unfinished house.
Exactly. Now, there's different people that can file these notice to owners. And there's laborers, people who basically are furnishing like labor or something like that only to the job. There's materialmen, and this is the most interesting one. This is somebody who provides materials or rental equipment. Like, say you need scaffolding to finish your job, they could be a materialman, and they could give you a notice to owner that, hey, I provide scaffolding for your job. I need to be paid. Anybody that basically who is not what you might think of as like a tradesman building something, anybody who brings materials to the actual house itself or the property itself. Of course, we have a contractor. We have everyone's favorite subcontractor. And then the little known subcontractor. So it can go all the way down. It can even be like professional leaners as well, such as like architects. Yeah, that. Architects.
Guys who draw plans.
Guys who draw good. Landscape architects, engineers, surveyors.
Architects. Had a heart attack when I saw the architect.
Surveyors, mappers, interior designers. People who are professionals, they can also provide a notice to owner as well. So what happens, and this is at least in Florida, again, this is not necessarily your state, but your state has laws like this, I'm sure. So if you are involved in the situation, you want to make sure you read up on them. The notice to owner has to serve the subcontractor, materialman, whatever, has to serve the notice to owner on the owner within, or not later than 45 days from the date of the first labor, services, or materials delivered to the job. So, and that's one of the first things they have to do. And if they don't do that, that can be a bar to them recovering under this mechanics lien.
All right. So serve it within 45 days of when you deliver the goods.
Yeah. And if you think about it, it makes sense.
Because usually most invoices are 30 days, net 30. So,
right.
You know, they're past due if they didn't do it in 30 days.
Yeah. Because you want to make sure that they're on notice, hey, that they realize that this has been done recently. And this, the whole thing, too, I mean, it does kind of make sense because you want to stay on top of these things. That's why you have these kind of timely deadlines for it. So the notice basically gives the owner the chance to look at it and make sure that that person has been paid, too, with the contractor. So as soon as they get this notice to owner, they go to their contractor and say, hey, I got this notice to owner from Joe's scaffolding company. You know, I see some scaffolds out there. What's this guy's bill? Have you paid him? You know, just kind of to stay on track of and keep everybody in the same loop.
Oh, yeah, he's been paid. I don't know what's wrong with him. Don't worry about it. It's all under control. It's all under control.
Yeah. Now, basically, if Joe's scaffolding comes up to you as the owner and says, hey, I put up some scaffolding. You better make sure I got paid or I get paid. That doesn't count. It's got to be formal. It's got to be the actual notice to owner. It has to be statutory form. I believe it has to be sent certified mail or something along those lines, too. So it's very, very strictly construed about how you have to do it.
You can't write it on a post-it and stick it on the forehead, huh?
No, no. Okay. You actually have actual delivery to the person.
Well, that'd be actual delivery.
Yeah. Stamp it on their forehead.
Yeah.
You can do it by actually handing it to them. Like I said, you can give them certified registered mail. You can actually, this is my favorite, is the posting at the job site.
I hereby bequeath, I have been shortened in the amount of this many U.S. dollars and proclaim this property to be mine in the name of the king unless I am paid further.
That always makes me think of my favorite theory whenever you're trying to get service on somebody, especially like for an eviction. There's the knock and nail. So you knock on the door, they don't answer, you just nail it up. Knock and nail.
Nail it to their forehead, that'll get their attention.
Exactly. Now, once the person has been paid, what they do is they execute a release of lien to the owner. So the owner, what they want to do is when they're building something, they want to get all their notice to owners when they're making payments to their contractor and make sure they have releases of liens for all those different subcontractors, materialmen, professional people, whoever it might be, to make sure that those have all been satisfied. So the reason you want to do this is because there's some kind of bad things that can happen later on if you don't get these releases of liens, and we're going to get into that. So,
all right. I remember having to do that. I had to have my contractor go around and get signatures from everybody that provided work that they had been paid.
Right.
Before I could finalize with the bank.
I think I may have talked to you guys about that at some point.
Well, you might have.
I think I definitely talked to Mary about it because I remember when you all were building your house.
Well, so. And my only problem with all of this is you hire some guy that's a licensed contractor, and you may not know anything about anything. You're dependent on this guy's expertise to build your house. You agree on an amount of money,
mm-hmm.
build your house, build your deck, whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
And you agree on an amount of money, and you pay that amount of money that you contracted to do. And then that guy runs off and he doesn't pay the subcontractors. And now your house has a lien against it. And you did everything you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that just, to me, that doesn't seem right. They should have to go after that contractor. Unless I sign the agreement, I don't think I should be responsible.
You're right. And I totally agree. And these are very kind of draconian type laws that are on the books. But think about what you said when you're given the history of it. It was basically an inducement originally to get people to want to build. And I think that there is a public policy argument made that we want to basically have contractors to build up the infrastructure and the housing in our nation. So we kind of give them the benefit of the doubt and lean it on their side. Do I think it's fair? Yeah.
Well, maybe it's outdated. Maybe it's an outdated concept that needs to be addressed on the books.
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, we have enough houses in this country, I think.
I mean, if the contractor, you didn't pay him.
Right.
Yes, I agree that he could do that. But the subcontractors, they were subcontracted by the contractor.
Right.
That's who's responsible to him, not me.
Yeah. And I think one of the issues, too, is that there's a legal theory about privity of contract. And by privity of contract means that you actually are contractually in a contract with them. And so everybody kind of knows where they are. So you have privity of contract with the contractor. But these other people that are coming to your house and whatnot, you have no idea who they are or what they're doing. So this kind of bridges that gap in the privity of contract between you and the subcontractor and these other people. So everyone's on the same page to know what was done and who paid for it and whatnot. So, I mean, I think there is probably a need for it. And I understand the theory of it. But, you know, it is kind of weighted. I mean, if you have an unscrupulous contractor, they can definitely screw somebody.
Oh, absolutely. Because they could collect all your money, not pay the subcontractors, and skip town.
That's true. But they've had to take tests and get licensed and things like that. And they won't be able to be a contractor again if they keep doing that kind of work.
At least not there.
Not there. But they might go to another state.
They're carpetbaggers.
Well, they might take their carpet bag and realize, like, hey, this state searches this all around the country to see if anybody's had these kind of claims.
Well, that would be good.
Yeah. Now, procedurally in Florida about how to perfect this lien, mechanics lien. So say you don't get paid. You're a subcontractor. You don't get paid. You don't give the owner a release of lien because the contractor hasn't paid you. Then what you need to do next is you need to file a claim of lien, and you record that in the public records, and that's in each county. And it basically will affect the title to the real estate at that point. So if they try to sell it,
exactly.
They try to sell it, there's a claim of lien. That's, you can't get a good title that way.
Right. So anybody would be hesitant to buy that property because they've got that lien against it. And then also, in some cases, the bank won't finance it as long as you've got a lien against it.
Yeah, they definitely won't. That'll be a cloud on title.
So you better have straight cash, homie.
That's right. So in Florida, the claim of lien has to be recorded not later than 90 days from the last performance of work or delivery of materials to the site. And this excludes any kind of warranty work. So it has to be like basically during the time when you're doing the work there. And once you record that claim of lien, then basically you have to serve that claim of lien on the notary, on the owner within 15 days of recording it. And basically, if you fail to serve that claim of lien on them, then basically that is a bar to recovery too under this. So that's another step in the criteria.
So you got 45 days to file it. And then you got 15 days to serve it.
Well, no, you have 45 days from the very beginning once you first provide
the service
to give the notice to owner.
Right.
Then you have to do a claim of lien within 90 days from the last bit of work you've done. And then you have to basically serve it. I'm sorry. You got me confused.
Rewind.
So you have 90 days from the last performance of work to file the claim of lien in the official records. And then once you file it in the official records, you have 15 days to serve it. So just to reiterate, in case that was confusing.
It was.
45 days from the first delivery of goods or services, you have to serve them a notice to owner. And then later on, you have to file a claim of lien within 90 days after the last performance of work, and then serve the owner within 15 days after you file it in the official records. Missing any of those steps is detrimental to your claim.
Well, good. At least it's complicated. So if they're going to do it, they've got to really work at it.
It's super complicated. I've tripped up lots of people on this because they missed one of the technicalities and they're like, sorry.
Yeah. Well, it'd be hard. I mean, how many people can you get in? I mean, you just about have to have a lot of free days to be able to get in and out of the courthouse or wherever you got to go to do all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
city hall or courthouse.
It's complicated, but I mean, if this is your livelihood, you should probably learn how to do this or hire someone who knows how to do it.
Your livelihood, screwing people over and putting liens on their property?
Well, no. I mean, if you're a subcontractor and you haven't been paid by the contractor, it's not really your fault. I mean, you went and provided goods, so.
I know, but I'm still upset about it.
I have a funny story about a contractor. And remind me later, and I'll tell you the story.
Well, that's two things we're doing later. I'm going to forget everything.
Oh, boy. So the question I know you're about to ask me is, well, how long does this lien last, Michael?
How long does this lien last, Michael?
Well, it typically remains effective for 1 year, but there's one way where you can actually shorten it from the 1 year period. And that is the owner files a notice of contest of lien. And then basically at that point it's shortened to 60 days from the date that basically the clerk serves notice of the contest of lien on the person who owns the property.
And so then it's decided by an arm wrestle?
Nope. Then at that point, once they receive that, then they actually have to file a lawsuit to perfect the lien within that time.
So that's when they have to present evidence as to why they have the lien filed.
Yep.
But does the lien just go away after a year? Oh.
So basically, I mean, they still have the lien there, but they're not given the benefit of how to enforce it. I'm about to explain what if you jump through all these hoops, what gets to happen.
Oh, okay. Well, what gets to happen after we jump through the hoops?
So if you do all these things we talked about,
yeah,
and your claim is still not satisfied,
mm-hmm,
then basically you file a lawsuit and you actually file a lawsuit which asks the judge to recognize the lien and basically say that it's valid. And then if they do that, then basically you can do a few other things, but then you can have the property sold at a judicial sale subject to basically satisfying the lien that you had on that house. So you can actually get a house sold out from underneath you because a subcontractor did not get paid.
And he might be $1,000 when they sell your $100,000 house for him to get his $1,000.
Exactly.
And do you get the rest of it?
No, then you distribute it to the owner. I mean, they're entitled to.
Well, that's what I meant. Owner. That's what I meant. When I said you, I meant you as the owner.
Yeah, you would get the whatever the balance of it is. But I mean, when you sell something at the courthouse steps, it's usually not very much.
Yeah, it's usually not at value.
Now, here's the one thing that really kind of, in Florida especially, becomes a kicker. Attorney's fees are recoverable to the prevailing party by statute.
All right.
So assume you do all these things and then you file the lawsuit to perfect it. Some attorneys will rush to file these lawsuits and then just send over letters, send over things, blah, 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 and build up their thing and charge $700 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have a lien, which is properly done through all these things for $1,000. You might have $7,000-$8,000 in attorney's fees. I mean, it can add up very, very quickly. And I've had many clients come to me and say, well, I just kind of ignored this and blah, blah, blah. And now there's an attorney. And now, I mean, I only owe this guy $1,000, but now I owe him like $6,000. And I look at the case and I'm thinking, I try to find one of these technicalities where they screwed up. And I'll tell you what, if I can't, I'm like, well, here's your choice.
Your house sold.
You can either pay him or have your house sold to satisfy it, because there's not much we can do.
Wow.
This is kind of very similar to the homeowners association law, too. If somebody's fined under homeowners associations, they can have their house sold from them, too, to satisfy that in Florida. And it's very, very bad. So I've had that pop up. Mm. Now, the thing is, too, is that this lien can actually jump priority of a mortgage, I believe, in some cases. So they get paid first for these improvements on it.
Before you'd pay off the balance on the house?
Yes.
So then you got the bank to deal with if you can't make ends meet.
Yep. So one crafty contractor in Florida, he owed some money on his house, and this is probably after the housing bubble burst, I believe it was. What he did was he went ahead and had one of his buddies do a notice to owner and all this stuff and perfect a lien on his house, and he actually let them perfect the lien and so it would jump priority in front of his mortgage to try to basically extinguish the mortgage and say he would just owe the other guy. And the other guy would actually, you know, try to take the house.
And so, but then they could turn around and sue him. The bank could turn around and sue him for the money that he owed him.
Then he could declare bankruptcy.
Oh, well, that's true. You can't get blood from a turnip, can you?
No, but actually the court caught on to that fraudulent scheme and did not allow it.
Oh, man.
I still thought it was pretty clever, though.
Yeah. Sound like something a lawyer would think of.
Well, yeah, or a contractor. They're pretty clever, too. Now, I do have some experience in a couple of these cases that's kind of interesting if you want to hear about them.
Well, sure. Was this what I was supposed to remind you of later? Was this one of the stories you were going to tell that was pretty funny?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I don't sound too sure about that.
Well, I had a client come into my office when I was in Florida, and they had hired a contractor to build a pool. And I think the total cost of building the pool was maybe like $25,000 or $30,000 or something like that. And if you've ever built a pool, one of the largest costs is actually the cement used to put in the deck around it. And to in Florida, that was a cement pool. So to basically build the walls of the pool. So they hired this company to come in. I guess there was some issue, and they hired C-Mex. You always see those C-Mex trucks that deliver concrete to come in and deliver the concrete. And they put in the concrete. They did their notice to owner, filed their claim of lien. And I guess the owner didn't follow up on it and didn't make sure that the contractor had paid them. And also, I think the contractor actually went out of business. And so basically, C-Mex had a lien against this person's house for delivering concrete to a pool, which is, if you think about it, it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
But they ended up getting sued. C-Mex sued them. And I went through and looked, and they did everything they were supposed to do. There was nothing they could do. They had already paid the contractor for the concrete.
And he took off.
He took off and declared bankruptcy into his business. And
was this the contractor on the house, or was this the pool guy?
This is the pool guy. They already had a house.
I tell you what, if anybody can find an honest pool guy out there, I want to know who he is, because I have not been able to find one in 5 years.
Yeah.
No, they're all undependable, and they don't do what they say, and they do shoddy work. And it's just awful.
If you're a good pool guy, then let us know.
Yeah, because I have not found one yet, and I can't find anybody that will recommend one. Even the local pool company here, they don't do any installations or anything. They just sell all the components and chemicals and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And you say, well, what if I want somebody to work on a pool? Do you got a recommendation? Nope. I'll give you a list of everybody that I know, but I don't recommend any of them. They'll give you a 3-page list, but they don't recommend any of them.
Yeah, I guess you got to look on Angie's list or something to see who's got good reviews and whatnot.
Well, but I'll tell you what Angie knows about pools.
I'll tell you, those kinds of websites can be kind of tricky, too. I mean, they're almost like extortion things for people's reviews and reputations, too.
Well, sure. Besides, you could go on there and write a bunch of good ones about yourself, couldn't you?
Yeah, that's how I built my business up. I mean,
well, there you go.
No, I didn't do it.
There you go.
Just kidding. I've never given myself a good review.
Michael.
Except if I was asked to.
Each one time you disguise your name, Mike A, Mike B, Mike C.
They'll never catch on.
Yeah.
So, you know, the weird thing about this, that concrete case and the pool case, is that in a period of about 4 or 5 months, I had 3 of the same exact cases with the same pool guy, the same C-Max and everything. It was really strange. So I have no idea how many people this guy screwed over.
Man, but he has a real scam going.
Well, I think it was probably because of where my office was located, and he must have like really worked that neighborhood. And there weren't a lot of attorneys right where my office was. So I think he was.
Man.
Yeah.
I hate people like that just are out there preying on people, and they could care less what they do to people's lives. I mean, that's probably people's lives were ruined financially and everything. Yeah. And they don't care. They just go out there and do that, isn't it? Oh, man.
Well, I guarantee that guy's not building pools anymore. He's probably not able to do anything.
Well, no, he's probably scamming in some other way.
Yeah. And those things are kind of in the area where it's almost quasi-fraud, quasi-crime.
I don't think that's quasi. I think that's all out.
Well, but I mean, if the guy takes money and he's like gets behind on jobs and, you know, the price of something goes up and it causes him to get behind on things. I mean, there could be legitimate reasons why somebody goes out of business like that. It, you know, you have to have that other element of the crime. What's that one called?
Mens rea.
Exactly. You have to have that specific intent to defraud somebody.
Anybody who, if that happened once, okay, maybe he just didn't plan well. But if it happened several times with the same one, that was intentional.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, who knows? He may have been taking a lot of money from these people. And I don't know how people it was. But I just thought it was really strange that I had three of those cases all in quick succession like that.
I think the only justice would be to put him in a locked room with all the owners that he defaulted on and let them mete out frontier justice.
I thought you were going to say something like having to do with concrete.
Well, yeah, we could put him in concrete shoes.
There you go.
Dump him in the ocean.
Size 13s, even though he wears a 10.
That's right.
So, now, if say you're a subcontractor and you basically miss one of these steps, does that mean you don't have any kind of remedy?
Well, you can't file a lien.
You can't file a lien, but you could also file a lawsuit.
Sure.
And the lawsuit you would probably file would be under a theory of quantum merit or unjust enrichment.
Quantum merit, is that like quantum leap? You have to go back in time and then file the documents correctly?
Where are we, Sam? No, it's basically it's...
We're 45 days ago. You haven't missed the deadline.
Go file your notice to owner.
It will reshape the world.
Quantum merit is actually Latin. It stands for as much as he deserved.
That's pretty literal.
Very literal.
As much as he deserved.
Right. And basically what it means is that if you provide a service or goods to somebody, then you should be entitled to what you gave them.
Well, sure.
And that is a equitable theory. So it's kind of different than the statutory lien law we're talking about.
Yeah, when they're going to buy your house out from under you.
And the other theory is called unjust enrichment. So that's basically somebody is enriched at the expense of another person. And the law basically says that that's not fair. So these are equitable remedies where the court kind of looks at equity or balancing things is in fairness. So you don't really want to argue those things as much as you would the other. It's better to have the actual statute and law on your side.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than saying, Judge, that's just not fair.
Come on, where's the fairness in all this?
Right, but you can see why you'd want to have the lien on your side as opposed to having a judge to say, hey, you know. And the other thing about if you get one of these judgments for quantum merit or unjust enrichment, you're not going to have that same hammer of the lien on somebody's
house.
The lien
hanging over them,
where
yeah.
You can force a sale of it to satisfy it.
Right.
And you're not going to have those attorney's fees either.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you don't just get attorney's fees if you win. You have to have them by statute or some other reason or by contract. So.
Right.
But yeah, that is mechanics lien law in Florida kind of in a nutshell as far as a contractor on your real property.
Now, here's what I found extremely ironic. When, you know, you just say, you give you somebody the term mechanics lien and a rough overview of it, you think, first thing that comes to mind is, oh, well, that's to protect mechanics that work on your car.
Right.
That if they do the work on your car and you don't pay for it, then they can keep possession of your car legally.
Yeah.
But it's actually not a mechanics lien when it has to do with your car.
No, it's called something different.
It's called an artisan's lien.
Yeah.
But for, I mean, you know what? He painted it, and so that's why it's an artisan lien? No. He did the mechanical work, and it's called an artisan lien. Now, I found that extremely ironic, that the one thing that it should apply to, and that's not even what it's called.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing as a mechanic's lien, but it's technically called an artisan's lien.
Yeah.
So they're considered artists. I guess if Subway got one, it's because they're sandwich artists, I guess. I don't know. They all live at Subway, don't they? Because they're all sandwich artists, so they're artisans.
We're looking to hire you as a possible artisan for Subway.
Yeah. Well, that's what they say. It's part of their slogan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not calling them artists. They call themselves that.
I fancy myself a bit of a sandwich artist. I crush up potato chips on my sandwich occasionally.
But now, with a mechanic, at least, or an artisan mechanic, if they assert a fee that is not reasonably related to the work performed and they refuse to return your vehicle until that price is paid, the owner of the vehicle will be able to recoup a storage fee from the mechanic as the mechanic is in the wrong for refusing to return the vehicle. In doing so, the mechanic would commit the crime of conversion or embezzlement.
Yeah. Conversion is a basically, fancy word of saying, stole.
He stole it. He converted it from me to him.
Pretty much. Now, the interesting thing about that storage portion actually works both ways. If you owe somebody
for the work they did
and you don't pick it up, they can charge you a storage fee on it.
Yeah, and add it, keep adding it to that.
Yeah.
You just need to make it reasonable. It's not like you could say, well, it's $1,000 a day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, something like that would overrule.
Well, that's what tow truck companies do.
Yeah. They try to do that.
I've always thought tow truck drivers are kind of like the modern day pirates. They cruise the streets looking to seize booty.
Arr, me matey, we see one ahead.
Yar,
let's go seize the booty.
Yar, he be double parked.
Arr.
prepare to repel borders.
It's a no parking zone. Hook him up and let's tow him.
Hook him up and take him back to Davy Jones' locker. That's what we call our tow yard. No, but I've always thought they were kind of like pirates. But in my experience, tow yards do charge pretty exorbitant storage fees.
They should have one eye and a hook for a hand.
Yeah. Actually, this is maybe what I wanted you to remind me of. One of my first courtroom victories came in litigating storage fees over a sailboat when I was an attorney in the Florida Keys.
Really?
Yeah. The guy had a very unreasonable storage amount that he was trying to charge the guy. And he wouldn't release the guy's sailboat. So we went down there and I went down, I think, with the sheriff trying to get it, and he wouldn't give it. So we had to file a court action, and we filed it, and actually went in front of the judge, and I argued that and won.
Well, good. Well, what was the guy's reason why he was charging him this exorbitant fee that I assume he didn't charge everybody else?
No, he charged everybody that. He was just a straight-up thief.
Oh.
I end up actually having three different
Do people not ask?
Well,
here, would you keep my boat? Sure, I'll keep your boat. Just leave it right there. We'll get to it. Okay, well, I'll pay you later.
He was a local boatyard guy in the Keys, and these were people who were kind of snowbirds and weren't from there, and they would just be passing through and need storage for stuff. So he would actually kind of, and he was very gregarious.
You'd still ask.
Well, yeah, but it was like,
I'll just leave it here. Don't worry about it.
Well, anyway, I ended up having three different cases with this guy over the years, and I actually beat him in every single case because he was a straight up crook. And eventually, after the last one, he looked at me and said, "Can I hire you? Because I'm getting tired of you suing me."
You say, "How about just work honestly, dude?"
Well, yeah. It was a shame.
This was in the Keys?
Yeah.
I thought everything was laid back and everybody was all friendly in the Keys.
They Man. Are, for the most part.
That guy must have been a retired pirate.
Yeah, he was kind of a pirate.
Yeah, sounds like it. He was grabbing somebody's booty.
Trying to.
Well, I came across something else that was warning you about things as far as frivolous liens that can be placed. And it said that in some situations, liens can make no sense. For example, imagine you have a lump sum contract for a kitchen renovation for $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then the contractor abandons the job after spending the $7,000 and then puts a $100,000 lien on your house.
Oh, yeah.
Said, you know, you can fight that simply because he didn't have $100,000 in it.
Yeah.
So you could contest it just on that basis.
Oh, no doubt. And then if he does that, he tries to use one of these statutory schemes to do it, then, and you have to hire an attorney to do it, he's going to be responsible for attorney's fees too, because I guarantee I'm going to cautiously guarantee that every single state is going to have an attorney's fees provision in their mechanics lien law.
And then another example they gave is that a contractor files a lien that includes attorney fees in its numerical total. In most cases, attorney fees are non-lienable because they do not represent the value of the work, labor, or materials contributed to the real property. So if they've included that in there, then automatically it gets rejected because of that.
Right. The difference would be is if the attorney's fees have accumulated after the fact and went to court for them to enforce it. Then
right.
That would generally become part of whatever needs to be satisfied from the sale.
Right, but that's if you lose and you've got to pay the attorney fees, but that's not what you'd place the lien for, that amount. That
Correct.
Would include that amount.
Yes,
the lien. You would just do it for your materials or labor involved.
Right, it has to be very strictly construed to just what you've done.
Right, and then that just comes later.
Right.
Loser has to pay.
Losers outs or losers ins.
Have you heard about the lonesome loser? He filed a frivolous lien.
And he got as much as he deserved.
That's right.
Nothing.
And with a fancy Latin term. And not a Latin lover.
I don't even know what that means.
It means a Latin lover. You've heard that. They always talk about that in things.
You know. Have you heard about the Latin lover?
No, I've heard about the lonesome loser.
Same song, isn't it? I don't know.
No, it's a different song, but the words fit, I guess.
Well, they both are L words, I guess. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where Tommy makes an obscure music reference, and I try to bring up what I can recall, and it's usually wrong.
But the Little River Band is not obscure.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms that we talked about on the show, and I usually ask Tommy if he can remember what it was, and he actually recently is doing quite well. I think he's on a 17-game winning streak at this point.
I don't know about that long. Must be those new brain booster pills I'm taking.
You take brain booster pills?
I need to.
I have to ask Sid if those work. So the first term, and there's just a plethora of terms that we talked about today.
Yes.
The first term would be, well, I'll even narrow this down for you a little bit. We're going to talk about Florida lien law.
Florida lien law.
What is a notice to owner?
What is a notice to owner?
And what time frame does that have to be filed in?
45 days from delivery of materials.
There you go. Look at that.
I remembered. There was a lot of confusing numbers involved in that, but I remember that.
You're good with numbers. So after 45 days, you and say you don't get paid by the you're going to be the subcontractor.
Okay.
You're going to be a materialman. You have provided railroad ties to landscaping on a piece of property.
Ones that I stole from the railroad.
And you did your notice to owner for providing the creosote-soaked railroad ties, which lasts longer, we've That's learned. Right. Mm-hmm. The owner has not paid you, and the contractor hasn't paid you. And you're like, hey, I need to get paid. What do you need to do next?
I have to file it within 90 days.
Right. You have to file your claim of lien. And where do you file that?
Well, at the courthouse or city hall or whatever.
Well, it would be at the courthouse. It'd be in the official county records. So okay. It depends on what in Florida, sometimes the clerk is the circuit clerk and the county clerk, but lots of places it's split.
So in Florida, I think that's Jasper, isn't it?
Jasper?
Yeah. Isn't that Jasper that takes care of that? Oh, Jasper. See him. He'll take care of that. He'll file it for you.
Go see Jasper down there in Apalachicola.
Yeah, he'll take care of you. Right across from PP Creek.
Yep, see, filed within 90 days. And again, this is not something that's going to be, state by state, it's going to vary greatly, but the whole theory is going to basically be the same. You're going to have to give notice to the owner in some form, and then you're going to have to do something to perfect that notice if you're not paid within a reasonable amount of time. That's just your general theory is how these things work.
So you're jumping through a couple hoops there.
Yeah, you got to jump through some hoops. You knew this term was coming. Quantum merit.
What he deserves.
Yeah, as much as he deserves. And what kind of claim is that? Is it a claim in law or is it a claim in something else?
Sounds like it must be a claim in something else.
Yeah, you're right. It is a claim in something else. It's an equitable claim.
It's an equitable claim.
That's right.
It says what's fair is fair.
That's right. It's not driven by the statute or anything like that. It's basically you go to the judge and say, hey,
it ain't right, judge. Make it right.
That's right. Make me right. Now, you're not going to get attorney's fees for those kinds of claims. So that's why you want to perfect your lien law and try to get that because you'll get attorney's fees and everything back. And what's the other big thing you get from perfecting a lien? What's the hammer?
The hammer is that you can sell their house if they don't pay it to get your money.
That's right. You're exactly right.
And you hit the jackpot.
You did. Again, I think you just extended your 18-game win streak here.
Yes.
You're my prized pupil.
Well, you see what happens when you're sober, that you can remember stuff.
Well, I'm having some wine here.
Well, Mary, I know, but I'm the one that has to stay sober to remember stuff.
Mary provided me with a glass of wine to warm me up on this cold night.
Yeah. from Cameron Hughes, wasn't it?
It was Cameron Hughes, and it was delicious.
Yeah, we like that. We don't just talk about it. We're partakers.
That's right. He didn't advertise with it this week. We're just talking about Cameron Hughes in general.
Just because he's a nice guy. And he has good wine.
I like Cam, and I like his wine.
Yeah. Of course, he'll never know this because he didn't pay for an ad this week, so so he won't know to listen to us.
Maybe I'll call him up. Hey, Cam.
Cam, we talked about you, dude.
Yeah, check it out.
Grape doesn't fall far from the tree.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what the context is. I don't know if we say this usually at the end of our shows, but if you haven't had a chance to like us or rate and review us on iTunes, we surely would appreciate it. It lets us know you care.
Yeah, as long as you care about us in a good way. Don't care about us in a bad way.
That would be, I don't care for you, I believe. If you don't care for us, then don't care enough to put anything on there.
Yeah, don't waste your time. You got better things to do.
That's right.
Go get a glass of Cameron Hughes wine.
Because the grape doesn't fall far from the tree. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I am just a dude.
Thanks for listening.